This is another episode of How I Lead with
Scott Hall.
Scott Hall, who's a member of a stake presidency and a current bishop.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Hello, this is Kurt Franklin with the Leading LDS Podcast. As always, trying to bring you really good quality content and experiences that is going to bless you as you continue to try to figure out your calling and be a better leader and inspire individuals and personally improve. So this is another great episode where I sit down with Scott Hall, who is being released as bishop this coming weekend because he was just recently called into the stake presidency. Now, the ironic thing is, and I guess it's not ironic because this is how we met, but the stake president to whom he serves with is my brother, who was just called as a stake president. So we actually chatted a little bit while he was serving as a bishop, had a few emails go back and forth with the changes in the stake presidency. I said, hey, let's finally find that time to sit down and talk about your time serving as bishop and some of the leadership principles that you learned. So here is my interview with Scott Hall. Thanks for sitting down with me, Scott.
You bet. It's great to be here.
Well, good. And I know you've listened to quite a few of episodes of Leading LDS, which I appreciate. You and my mom are listening in. This is good.
The two biggest fans.
That's right.
That's great.
Now, we'll get into sort of your double calling at the moment, which you're being released this Sunday from being bishop, right?
Yes, that's what I hear.
Good. Eventually. All right. And let's start from the beginning a little bit. Where are you from?
So I grew up in Murray most of my life, since about first grade and on. And my parents still live there. Went to Murray High School. And so that's about where I'm from.
Great. Pretty typical upbringing as far as being born and raised in Utah?
Yeah, I think you could say that. Very good experience getting out of Utah when I went on my mission the first time, really outside of Utah, and saw and experienced some different things. But it was, I wouldn't trade my upbringing for anything. Nice. I've learned a lot from my family.
And so that led to, you jumped through all the youth hoops, and then that led to a mission?
Yep. I went on a mission about 6 months out of high school. Went to Frankfurt, Germany. It wasn't what you would call a high baptizing mission by any means, but met some great people. And one unintended byproduct of my mission was a mission companion I had is the cousin of my current wife.
That's how you were introduced?
So that's how I was introduced. When I got back from my mission, he's from Idaho. He was living with my wife's family in Sandy, and I would visit there. I mean, a funny story a little bit. She was in high school still, a senior, and had a friend who wanted to date her, and we made fun of him a little bit because she was too young. And a few years later,
you were these old return missionaries,
exactly.
Right?
So we became friends and didn't start dating until about 2-3 years down the road, and the rest is history, I guess.
Nice.
As you say.
Great. Now, as you look at just your 2 years serving in Germany, anything specific, like if you could describe what you took away from your mission in just a couple sentences, what would you say?
Yeah, I would say that it wasn't easy in terms of baptizing and people wanting to hear the gospel. But in Germany, it was great to get people to smile sometimes and to just be friendly and to get to know their culture and know that that's maybe not their most natural way of life all the time. However, I also had multiple experiences with different companions, different personalities, as most usually have on a mission. And I learned to deal with things that were difficult, probably, and helped me grow more than, obviously more than I would have had I not gone on my mission. So.
Awesome. Now, so you return home, meet your wife a couple of years later, or you met her right after her mission, but married a couple of years later. And now what phase of life would you say you're in right now?
I would say, I guess, the midlife crisis phase, not really, but We have 6 children, and that's obviously a huge focus. I have an oldest from 12 years old, all the way down to the youngest is 1. So 4 boys, 2 girls, and our phase of life, I guess, would be the middle of the life where you're making ends meet and serving in the church and teaching kids and learning how they learn and that type of stuff, wow. I guess. So.
So 6 kids, you said?
Yeah.
So you're about halfway done?
Yeah, halfway done. Halfway. Nice. We need to have a good bench after our first 5 are in the game.
Very cool. So interesting connection we have as far as you actually are a bishop, a current bishop in the stake that I grew up in. And your ward is actually always our rival basketball ward. Nice. I don't know if you're aware of this. I should have explained it before we started.
That's
but
great.
It was always back and forth who was winning and going to region and so forth. But nonetheless, what landed you in this area?
God, that's a good question. So,
and this is in Taylorsville, West Valley City area.
So I've worked in real estate. I started in 2002, and in 2004, we lived on a busy street in Sandy, and that's not where we wanted to raise our kids, on a busy road where it's dangerous. And so we looked around, and there were 2 other houses in this neighborhood we looked at, and one we made an offer on and didn't get. And we were just kind of drawn to the area. I'm not sure really what it was. And then finally in the summer of 2004, we were successful in getting a home here, and it had been vacant for several years, so we fixed it up for several months, then moved in. We've been here ever since. So,
great.
Yeah.
It's a good area.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, parts of it, I technically grew up in West Valley City, and West Valley City gets a bad rap, in my opinion. I enjoyed my childhood growing up here. It was very safe. I didn't feel like I was in the slums by any means. So, it's a good area, in my opinion. So, now, let's go back to your time as called as bishop. How long ago was it that you were called as a bishop?
I was called in August of 2013. Oh, that's, I'm trying to think through the time. And I had been in the bishopric as a second counselor for 3 years, and then a first counselor for 3 years as well to a different bishop, and then called in about 2.5 years ago, called as bishop.
What do you remember of that time when you were extended that calling? What things were happening, events around that, or what led to that?
Yeah, it's like really interesting to think back on that. I was the first counselor at the time to our current bishop at the time, and the second counselor had moved away probably before I was put in, and probably about 2 or 3 months. So it was the bishop and me as his first counselor, and no second counselor for probably 2 or 3, maybe 4 months. And that was a lot of work, I as you might imagine. And I feel like the bishop, and he kind of described it this way, was trying to go through who he should call as his replacement counselor for the one who had moved away. And eventually it became clear to him that he was going to move rather than replace his counselor. And about the same time, probably about 2 months before I was called, I started having some feelings that I felt were uncalled for and maybe unrighteous, and I wasn't aspiring to be the bishop, but I felt like, I mean, even having listened to some of your other podcasts, the different people had experienced the same thing, and eventually the stake presidency, as they were called as bishop, to describe some of the same feelings. And it was to the point where I couldn't get enough of things of a spiritual nature. I couldn't listen to or read enough in the Book of Mormon on a daily basis to fill me up enough. I listen to church hymns all the time, and I don't listen to church hymns all the time. I like the hymns, but it was almost surreal. And
just an enormous thirst towards all things gospel.
You bet. Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, I even remember cleaning the church building on a Saturday with others in our ward, and I listened to about 15 chapters in the middle of Alma during that. And I wasn't done. I couldn't, like I said, I couldn't get enough of it. And I love the gospel. I love reading in the Book of Mormon, but it had never been anything quite like that before. And this was at a point where it was still 2 months or so before I was officially called in and extended a calling as the bishop. So
And then it came.
And then it came.
The phone call came, and here you are marching into the state president's office.
Yeah, and I guess even to back up one more night, it was a Saturday night, and President Max Thompson in our state presidency was the first counselor at the time, and I had first gotten a call from our Bishop Nurden on Saturday night saying, President Thompson is looking for you and it's urgent. And it was about 9 o'clock on Saturday night. And I'm like, oh, maybe these feelings are, there's a reason now and it's coming to pass. And so I went home and I made the phone call to President Thompson. And it turns out that he says, so I was the one in the agent ward in charge of scheduling the building. And he said, we need to schedule the building immediately for this. Completely unrelated to anything to do with being called as the bishop. But
nice.
I had really had stronger feelings that week, which, again, I felt unrighteous again when I'm thinking, okay, he's just scheduling the building. That's all we're doing here. And then the next morning I was in the church for bishopric meeting. I got here about a half hour early and the stake presidency was meeting and the executive secretary, as I walked to the restroom in the drinking fountain that morning around 6 a.m, pulled me aside. And so this is literally, you know, 8 or 9 hours after I'd called President Thompson the night before. And the executive secretary pulled me aside and said, hey, President Morrill needs to meet with you this afternoon with your wife. I'm like, wow, okay. Last night was the pump fake.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And here's, and now we're, anyway, so that's, it was kind of interesting how it played out there.
So that was roughly 2.5 years ago that call came. And then just recently, a month ago, I was actually at your state conference because I was there to show support to my brother who was being called as state president as they read off as counselors. Your name was read off as his second counselor. And so comparing the time that you were called as a bishop to the time you were put in the state presidency, obviously it's a much different process with, you know, I remember before I was called in the state presidency, the interview process you go through and you know, there's change coming. You don't necessarily, you know, it's maybe a less subtle than maybe getting called as a bishop because you just never know when that's coming. But what do you draw on from that experience of being called to the state presidency?
It was interesting because I think a lot of people have feelings, and President Uchtdorf talks about some of those feelings are that you're worthy and it's not aspiring and it's not necessarily unrighteous, but you also want to serve. And being called in, as you know, to be interviewed by good brethren who are qualified and looking for discernment and witnesses of who to call and how to go about that process. The love that I felt in that room was unreal. But preparing for it and during it, it was an interesting balance because you want to speak your heart and your mind because I respect this process. I respect what they're trying to do and fill the spirit. It feels almost like a job interview, but also one where you're not going in there to try to impress like you would in a normal job interview.
Yeah. Check out my resume or all my qualifications. Yeah. Home teaching's up by 10% in my award. Just for
yeah. And you want to, I want to go through that process in a way that is honest and forthcoming because I respect the process and the mantle that they hold to make the decisions. And I had feelings a little bit beforehand and we talked about them a little bit. It wasn't quite the same as when I was called as bishop, but I felt like something was on the horizon and I was overwhelmed as it usually goes as well, but also happy and willing to serve and do whatever, the Lord would have me do and lift wherever he would have me stand. So,
so there the call came and now you've been in this role quite a few weeks now. What, anything stand out as what surprised you about serving in a state presidency that maybe you didn't expect?
Boy. So I left the country for 2 weeks right after being called. And so I haven't really participated in
all the
round of meetings just yet and all the different, things. I don't know if surprise would be the way of saying it, but probably right after the conference ended that Sunday and then at some temple dedications where we got to see all the members again and priesthood session of general conference, just the support and the love that everyone who, and so many of them I don't know and they don't know me come up and offer support and sustaining words and just a feeling of the spirit and the brotherhood and the sisterhood and of the members is maybe not as surprising as it was reassuring.
Great. Awesome. And let's talk for a minute about my brother and what a mess he is as a state president. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I've interviewed him on the podcast before and everybody can listen to that, but he's a good man. He's very worthy.
That was one of my favorite podcasts for sure. I heard him tell about when he was called as bishop, I had to text him and I did text him right after. I said, that's how I felt. It was so good to hear.
Cool.
So good to hear that.
Yeah. I encourage you to listen back on that episode for sure. So let's shift back to your time as bishop a little bit, since that's maybe where you'd claim any experience exactly. Since you're just a few weeks into the state presidency gig. Anything, maybe tell us about the ward. Obviously it's in the Salt Lake Valley, and so there's some generalities that come with that, but anything unique about the ward that may set it apart from other Utah wards?
I think it has some of the same struggles that a lot of people and a lot of wards, I mean, have. And maybe more than anything, it was eye-opening to me the different trials that we all have. And you've talked about a lot of your podcasts about the different struggles that we have in society, that whether it be same gender attraction or crises of faith and the levels to which those affect people and marriages and families and personal testimonies was shocking, I would say. There was a great deal of some mental health issues, and they need the atonement, and they also need some professional help. But the faith of those people who struggle for all the different reasons that they struggle, and it was probably awe-inspiring, I would say, to see them put faith in a bishop who doesn't know anything from anyone else other than he has the mantle of bishop. And as we prayed together and searched in scriptures together and tried to work through these problems, it was sobering to see their faith and their efforts to overcome the trials that they were experiencing. And I don't want to make it sound easy. It wasn't easy. Sometimes it worked, and others it's still a work in process.
Yeah. You know, to add on to that, just you mentioned the struggle where you don't really, you mentioned, you listed off some random thing, mental health, same-sex attraction, faith crisis. Those always seem like other people's problems that are too far away, that are separated from yourself, or other wards or other bishops are maybe struggling with those. But you really don't understand the level of struggle happening in a ward until you're behind that bishop's door, and people are actually articulating it, because they're not, nor should they feel like they need to articulate it completely out in the open or in a Sunday school class. But when you get those people behind the door and they feel like this is a comfortable place to really talk about those things, it's amazing the level of struggle in a ward that looks very typical, right?
Yeah, exactly. And in an interesting way, you listen to general conference or you read scriptures and you pray in your normal routine, and things affect you as you're praying for help or looking for answers to your prayers for your problems or your families. But it became very evident very quickly how, as I listened to general conference or again, read in the scriptures or listened to the scriptures and prayed, that there were countless times where something came to me when I least expected it. It didn't have to do with me, but rather with a member in the ward, and to the point where I would make a note or send a random text during my Book of Mormon study in the morning and say, hey, this applies, what do you think? And I wasn't doing it for personal recognition, but because I truly cared about some of the struggles they were going through, and it built up a rapport with that person to think that I was thinking about them at a time when we weren't just in the bishop's office.
Yeah. And there's a lot of validating that comes to an individual who gets that text and this feeling of, I'm not alone in this journey and the struggle to figure out what my next step is, right? Even if you're not finding the answer that's going to solve it, right?
Right. And a lot of times it was definitely not even close to the answer. I was going down the wrong path completely, but I built up some relationships that way. And I even got to the point where I would tell them, you're going to probably receive a text from me. some random time during the day because I can't not care. It's I try to be a caring person, but I think the mantle of the bishop has made it so I can't get away from it. And that's a good thing and a righteous thing.
Yeah. And that's an interesting point I think worth highlighting is that there's sometimes this undertone in a relationship between an individual who's struggling and their bishop where it sort of feels like a doctor's visit or a counselor visit where, okay, it's been 2 weeks. How you been? You know, you taking your meds or, you know, but there needs to be a little bit more than that within that bishop relationship where, like you said, that those texts or, and sometimes it seems a bit much to, you know, you don't want to call them every day though. You're worried about them day to day. You don't want to overwhelm them with too much help, but you also want those touch points. Anything else come to mind as far, you know, as managing that relationship, but you say texting, anything else you did as a habit through as you, whether you realize it or not now looking back?
Yeah, it's interesting. Cause I'm a fixer, I think, by nature.
Because you're a man. I like to, that's what we do.
Exactly. I want to have resolution to things. And at the end of each appointment, I want to make sure we've, you know, solved all the problems in the whole world. And that was something I needed to learn to not do, which is okay.
Or because, expect to obvious progress. Right?
Yeah, because we're working on the Lord's time and not my time. And it also, because I wanted to resolve something, I needed to be reminded, and our stake president was good, and your brother, as we talked, and I think my dad and my brother and others helped me remember multiple times that it was I was just a tool in the Lord's hand, and I wasn't there to fix the problems. It had to be between the member and the Lord still, and that is key. As much as I wanted to fix it, it was not my deal in the end.
We're going to count that as your first leadership principle, whether you like it or not,
yeah, fair
because
enough.
I think this is important, is this attitude where I think a lot of maybe first year bishops, or it takes a while to learn this. And really it's one of those things that you never can teach somebody. They just sort of have to figure it out themselves. But
I agree.
when I got to the point as a bishop where I stopped trying to fix everybody that walked in the door, like I became so much better of a leader, so much better of a bishop, someone who people enjoyed talking with, and because they knew they weren't just a specimen that I was analyzing, right? And be like, well, maybe if you tried this or that, but that you were somebody that was open to hearing their struggle, trying to understand or relate with it to some extent, but always turning to the Savior and saying, well, this is the real key. This is really who's going to fix the problem.
Yeah, I agree. And that even probably flowed over into issuing callings and making changes in the ward and even responding to some different issues that we had. And I wanted to change this calling or that calling, and just to be reminded, it wasn't according to my timeline and my timetable. It was as the Lord would have it do. And again, President Morrill was great at reminding me, this is not your ward. You're the bishop for now, but it needs to, things will happen as they come. So
great. Well, let's continue on. Obviously I ask individuals that I interview on the How I Lead segment to think about five leadership principles that you live and die by that have just become a pillar in your leadership style. And it's always interesting to hear how these vary and how some are pretty consistent. And so before we started recording, we sort of consolidated one. So we were down to four, but with that one, we're at five. All right. So the first one you list is personal worthiness.
And this one, I think I came on to a little bit late in the time that I served as bishop or still serve as bishop. I think it's so important in PPIs, but just in general in ward council to discuss your own personal worthiness, not out there for everyone to hear, but the importance of being worthy so that no matter what your calling is, you're always doing the small and simple things. And it sounds so simple, and that's the beauty of it. It is just so simple. If you're praying, and not so you can check the box that said I pray, but so you pray. And so you're reading the Book of Mormon, not so you can get a chapter out of the way, but as you fill and find answers to your questions, then that's again a small and simple thing. And if you're serving others, those types of things, I think that if I as a leader had focused on that earlier, things would have gone more smoothly. I think that we sometimes get into the minutiae of other things where maybe we focus on, and we kind of started doing this later with PEC, Ward Council, Bishopric, about having spiritual messages and things that invite the Spirit just right then. And then hopefully it's apparent that that's an important thing for all the leaders to do and to pass to their families and to their home teaching and visiting teaching families and all up and down the row, I think is so important.
And in regards to that, you know, doing the little things, was there, and is there any specific habit or shift you made in your approach to doing those things? I mean, not that you were completely neglecting them before, but to make them more of a focus, was there a different habit that you put in place or routine?
It's interesting because I never want my, and that's what I struggled with a little bit. I have a routine of when I listen to the scriptures and then go back and read the chapter that I've listened to. And I love the general conference addresses. And I was always hesitant to put my routine onto somebody else, but I eventually decided that it was worth a try because it worked so well for me. And we came a few months ago and challenged our ward to do those things. So I shifted a little bit probably in the fall of last year and earlier this year to really encouraging people to get in the habit of simply, and then, I mean, just having very clear goals in place, like read in the Book of Mormon daily and read a conference talk daily and search for things. There were a few conference talks that really affected me related to this, but look for things that you can improve personally in your life and let the Spirit work on you. And that's what I try to convey to all the members in our ward. And it had worked for me and it still needs to work for me every day because we all have things to improve on and the Spirit is the teacher. And that's what I think has changed a little bit.
Awesome. The next principle you mentioned is example. And I don't know if you're highlighting your example as a father specifically.
So and I've talked in different talks and other areas and opportunities about my dad and my mom. And so my dad's callings, I remember when I was in fourth grade and my dad was called into the stake presidency. And he served with that stake president for 9 years. And he was released. So I was in fourth grade. He was released about 2 months into my mission. So that's the childhood, obviously, growing up that I had. And that's not unique to just me, but that was interesting. And then for the next 9 years, he was called as the young men president for a year, year and a half. Then he and my mom served together in the nursery for about 3 years. That was wonderful. Then they served as inner city missionaries. And then after those 9 years were up, he was called as stake president. And so he was back in as the stake president and served there. And what I want to highlight about what they did and what I got to see growing up was it was just so much more important how you serve than it is where you serve. Because as a nursery leader for those 2 or 3 years, he served absolutely as faithful as he did as a stake president.
And you noticed that as a son, right? That didn't matter where he was serving, he still had the same focus. And
right. And I would hope that I could be as faithful and probably not near as faithful as he was. But his example taught me that it's just so much more important to serve well and to lift where you stand. Cause that's the beauty of our church. We're a bunch of imperfect angels going about trying to do the Lord's will.
Yeah. And that's an interesting concept because it seems like typically what, you know, a bishopric position many times leads into a bishop position, which can lead into a, you know, a stake high council position or a stake presidency position, or, you know, that leadership, that time in leadership is sort of clumped together in an individual's life. And so many times, you know, as I look at the last decade where I've been involved in, you know, pretty intense leadership callings in a ward or stake, I often wonder, you know, there's going to be the time where I need to move and I may be in that nursery or I may be in the young men's program just how we're serving there. And oftentimes as a leader, I would tell, you know, when we'd call a Relief Society president, I'd often remind the ward that this Relief Society president has it easy because her ways of serving is sort of thrust upon her. You know, they're obvious. If she doesn't show up on Sundays, people are going to notice, where it's everybody else that, how are you going to serve? Because the same is required of you to give of everything you have in your service, and, you know, the covenants we make in the temple and so forth. But so I think it's a good point where that example, especially to your children, is going to happen even if you're not the bishop, you know, even if you're serving in an auxiliary.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's so important. And it's not just you serve when you're in a more visual calling, I guess, for instance. That's probably a really good way to look at it.
Yeah. Now, we connected, I think one of the first times we connected was a year or so ago when I had the interview about remembering names. And some tactics that a leader can do to remember names, because remembering a name is the most beautiful sound in the world to an individual is their own name, right?
You bet. I totally agree.
Shakespeare, who said that? But and so you listened to that and then kind of shared in a brief email how you go about that. So your we're now calling it your fourth leadership principle is names of people.
Yeah, my dad always joked that when he was on the stand growing up, it's not terribly fair to have those who probably got up really early in the morning sit up on the stand in front of people where it's really hot and you're supposed to stay awake for the whole congregation to look at. And a lot of times we see leaders up there falling asleep. Yeah. And I didn't want to fall asleep. And so I made a habit of, while I was the bishop, and I think even a little bit before when I was a counselor in the bishopric, to kind of kill two birds with one stone. I wanted to learn the names of everyone in the ward, but that was pretty easy because I think over those years serving in the bishopric as a counselor, I just got to know everybody. But the kids was a little bit different, knowing the kids' names. And so every sacrament meeting, I would just, as soon as the sacrament was over and there were speakers up there, I would just get out a piece of paper and while listening to the speaker, because I've actually learned over, I don't know what the study is, but if you're doing something with your hands, playing with a Rubik's Cube or a toy or something, you're more easily able to listen to speakers. And maybe
it's keeping your right brain activated with the writing, so your left brain can listen.
Exactly. And so I'm no doing that, and I like it. and so I would just go around the congregation and write down the names of the kids and the families that I saw. But I didn't want to restrict it to just those who were present. And so I would have LDS tools out and look down the names of the families that I knew and didn't know and learn the names of their kids and write those down as well. Again, kind of a game for myself without looking, so I could memorize the names of the kids without them being there. So it got to the point where I think I know pretty much all the kids' names in our ward, but I guess it's a little difficult because there's so many kids sometimes and pitchers. We try to get people to put their families in LDS.
Never ending battle.
Exactly.
For church leadership is please just take the selfie, upload it to LDS tools. I beg you.
We did that a little bit during tithing settlement time. We had a clerk come out and take pictures of whoever was willing to.
You always try.
And so, yeah, but I think it does mean a lot to people if you know the names of their kids. And years ago I knew the youth's birthdays as well, because that's an extra step in making them feel important and known and that you're aware of them.
Yeah. And just to underscore that further is I think sacrament meeting is a great time to do that. Cause one, you're on your perch there on the podium, right. And you're able to see individuals. And so it's a good time to quiz, but also it does open a leader's mind to specific inspiration or revelation that may come to that, you know, when you identify that person and a certain feeling comes. I remember just in my time serving the state presidency, you know, going around visiting different wards, I remember one Sunday, and I need to get this bishop on the podcast. He's so good. But I looked over and he was making notes on the program, and he had on one side, it said here. And then on the other side, the column was not here. And so he was writing down names of individuals who were like, oh, wow, like I haven't seen that person in a while. I'm going to write their name down and that'll help remind me to reach out to them. And then he was writing people who he didn't see, right? So there's various ways to go about it. But I think that time of being in sacrament, of course, we're always paying attention to the speaker and you know, that's important. But there is so much leadership that can happen in your own head while you're sitting there.
Yes, totally agree. Inspiration came sometimes when least expected, but yeah, helped keep me awake and definitely learned the names of the people and then meant a lot to them, I'm pretty sure.
All right, this last principle, you're giving a shout out to your wife, Megan.
Yeah, my wife, Megan, is, I said it in state conference, is very much an example of truly good and without guile. Her parents are great. Her dad's a mission president right now in Australia. And
that's where you were the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, right? So that's where I went for 2 weeks.
You can't cancel a trip to Australia.
Not
just
really,
because you were put in a calling, right?
Yes. And so he always had a joke, but it's a semi-serious joke, that there's a reason that there's two basketball hoops in a church and only one pulpit, because that might be twice as important. Sometimes that's only, I'm not going to say that church basketball is more important than the doctrine that are taught here, but the activation efforts and the camaraderie that can happen in the gym is so important.
It's an interesting perspective.
And the way, yeah, I'm gonna
memeify that somehow.
Yes, exactly. I can just see it on Google now.
Just like the old adage of you have one mouth and two ears and act accordingly or whatever. Yes. It is. So in a church, two basketball hoops, one lectern, act accordingly.
Yes.
But, you know, obviously you can get too carried away there, right?
Well, yeah. So you take it only so far, I guess, because the doctrines are so important. But right. My wife, so without her, I'm probably more reserved. I'm not as involved, and we are going to do every activity. We're going to support every single function, not necessarily because we need it to be involved, but there were leaders who went to great amounts of effort to put together this or that or whatever party or function or service activity it was. And she's truly made me a better person just by knowing her, but there's much more to it than that. And yeah, I think that I would have been a totally different person over the last, you know, 14 years had I not known my wife. And that goes without saying, but it's very specifically in this example.
So when we meet with, I've had opportunity to being in the state presidency to be in the room when I think it's been three bishops now that we've extended that call to. And I always take time in that interview setting to highlight that this is an unofficial calling for the wife, that you are,
yes,
you're being called as the bishop's wife, right? And there's so much to that. So since you brought up your wife, what are some things that come to mind as how she fulfilled that role as bishop's wife?
Oh, so many different ways. She would see me come home, and she's been doing all the work, again, the six kids. And it sounds like a neat thing to say sometimes, but it's not just a nice thing to say. She does the hard work while I sit at the church and get to bear testimony with people. How hard is that? That's great fun. And and she's putting six kids to bed and going to this or going to that. And so her support is something I would absolutely highlight, because she does the things that I wasn't able to do because I was at the church helping with something else. And again, we don't need to compare what's easier or more difficult, but she definitely did the hard things, that's for sure. And so she also allowed me to have time to not talk about things, because there's a certain level of confidence has to be kept. She's obviously curious, because how can you not be curious? And what do you talk about in relationship and a marriage? And she was kind and gentle and gracious to allow me, obviously, not to share things I couldn't share, but had leaders who said to share things that you can share as often as you can, because her input will be far more valuable than you might realize. And it was, absolutely was and is. And so,
They definitely have a unique perspective of the war, especially from the perspective of Relief Society, what's going on there. And obviously, as bishop, you take your time to visit the Relief Society and feel extremely awkward, but nonetheless, it's the auxiliary that you work with. And I've had many, and there's so many logistics setting up these interviews like this. Even one-on-one can be, you know, we've had several emails go back and forth just to set this one, but in a perfect world, I'd love to do these How I Lead interviews, and maybe I should make more of an effort with the couple, because it really is you know, to hear that perspective. And many of these leadership points, you know, a bishop's wife or, you know, or Relief Society president's husband could add to these, and it's sort of become a culture in their home. But, and I've talked with all my sister-in-laws and my wife of saying, I want to get an interview where I just talk with bishop's wives or state presidency wives and talk about it, because nobody truly understands the tears that come to a bishop's wife. and they're always behind doors. And here they have this husband who is very much in the public eye in their ward. And, you know, everybody's just being very vocal about their gratitude and things. And sometimes that can be missed just with every good intention for the bishop's wife.
Yeah, that is for sure. They do so much more than anyone ever maybe even realizes or mentions sometimes.
Well, let's jump into some of the practicalities of being a bishop and just with your schedule. Any unique approaches to your weekly schedule from Monday to Sunday, how you approached your calling and what really worked for you that was maybe an effective point to share?
You know, that's funny. There's one of the area authorities talked to my dad when he was put in as stake president, and he shared this with us, and I've tried to use it to some extent because it's helpful for me to have somewhat of a routine rather than just hit and miss and hope that things get done the right way. So for me, it was helpful to hear this. He said that on Sunday, you're obviously as bishop, you're going to do a ton of things at the church, and counselors do everything they can to take things off of the bishop. And so I tried that as a counselor, but then Monday night, absolutely for families. And that gets tricky sometimes with my profession, but that is absolutely where it should be. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night can be church stuff. It probably shouldn't be. There can be youth nights and some interviews and absolutely bishopric visiting. I think that's one of the best things that all the members can do is get out and visit the members in their homes and feel the spirit of that. And Friday night is date night. And then Saturday is a special day. It's the day you get ready for Sunday.
Right.
Do it
sing
all over
it,
again.
Brother, sing it.
That hymn, I bear testimony of that.
Yeah.
Hymn. There's so much that, and there's other things you can do, other things you can get done that day as well. But that schedule is really helped me to hear. Yes.
And those Saturdays, a bishop or a church leader really has to be deliberate to make it a day of preparation, right?
Yeah.
For the Sabbath, because if you don't, it leads to a rough week.
Yeah, flying by the seat of your pants on Sunday mornings without any preparation is not the best choice,
yeah.
To say the least. And
yeah.
So much can get done. Yeah.
Nice. Any specific technologies you use, apps or online applications?
Years ago, we got into some of the Apple products because our whole bishopric at the time had that. A lot of those fellows have moved away. And so now I'm not the most technology savvy guy there is, and so okay. I need some help. Syncing calendars is very helpful with an executive secretary. Your podcast, and I don't remember how long ago it was because I don't listen to them all always right when they hit. But,
what? This is shocking to hear.
I'm all over the place. But the neat sister in Australia who talked about LDScallings.com,
oh, yeah.
I don't, maybe you know exactly when that was, but it
I'll link to it. So
we've implemented that in our ward for the last several months, and it's been great. And now we'll hand it off to the new bishop when he's called and see if that's the route he's going to go. And it's been that week I had decided to sketch out on a piece of paper how I was going to have one of my counselors go and build something, software, an app or something, to help keep us organized, because I didn't like things falling through the cracks. Like if you're calling a youth, say a deacon's quorum president, you need to go and speak to his parents, for instance, for mm-hmm. beforehand. Or yeah. If you're calling someone like we did as a Relief Society president who serves as the secretary in the state primary, you probably need to have a conversation with those. So yeah. Just some different things to keep in mind and order. And then after the callings are issued and they're sustained, a lot of times they don't get updated in the LCR or mm-hmm. MLS before, or they need to be set apart. So just a beginning to end process, and that has helped keep us organized. It was great. Monthly or weekly emails saying, hey, there's sort of a snapshot of what you're looking at, a dashboard. And yeah, so I guess getting back to that piece of paper I was sketching out, I pulled up that podcast, listened to that podcast, and crumpled up the piece of paper and said, never mind, we're going to try this. And so we've been using that for a few months now.
Cool. I'm just looking up the post here so I can reference her name. Cassie Woolley is the one. And so that was, I think a few months back, but I'll link to that on this episode in the notes. But, and is she constantly updating that with features? I mean, did you ever email her and say, hey, it'd be nice if it did this, or was it pretty straightforward in your experience?
We left it kind of as is in time. We had a few suggestions, but it was just recently we had those suggestions and we haven't gotten to her yet. And then a few questions about some of how different things work. And so no, in fact, I was wondering if she's in the mission where my wife's dad is the mission president. I'm
not sure. Stop by and
see, have a little meeting and then we can expense the whole trip or something.
Nice.
So no, we didn't get too deep into it. Some of it we used, we didn't use all of the functionality of it, but yeah, it was really helpful.
Yeah. Even, but like you said, sometimes you just need a simple interface that allows you to go through that checklist or create that checklist and not miss those little steps. Cause
right.
I remember several times sitting 3 minutes before sacrament meeting with our sustaining list and thinking, oh my goodness, I did not release the guy who I'm replacing, right? Or,
and that's the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah, because then you're like, oh, now we're going to push it back a whole week. And, you know, you can't,
right.
There, it becomes a mess. So yeah, that's a simple way to solve that solution. Any thoughts on your approach to home teaching as a bishop? And obviously, maybe you delegated most of that to your elders quorum president, but it's always a question, not always, but I generally like to ask just to see if there's any gems we can pull from your approach.
I guess probably going back to the example of my dad, and there's not a whole lot you can do other than just do it. That sounds too simple, but my dad home and visit or home taught, and my mom was his companion for some of the time. A man who, before they were assigned to him, had never let the mission or the not the missionaries, the home teachers or visiting teachers in with his wife. And over the years, my parents, you know, met on the doorstep for about a year or two and then gradually progressed to getting inside the door, but not sitting down. So long story short, over time, this brother finally allowed them to come in monthly and teach a lesson, and then gradually came back to church. And then he, became a member of the bishopric and then served on the high council and is just a great active brother. And that's a really short version of the 2.5 decade story.
Yeah.
But the gem that I pull out of that is that my dad and my mom just became his friend, and they did it with a few other of these single people in the ward. And that was that. There's no rocket science to it other than just going and being their friend.
Yeah.
And that, maybe a little bit off topic, if that's okay.
No, we can go anywhere you want, as long as it's not real estate.
Yes, you'll exactly. Bore me. No kidding. That's no good. The ins and outs of that. No. So when my dad's dad was, he was inactive. They were fairly inactive for quite a few years. A bishop had a prompting, and so it's a little bit related to this, but he had a prompting to go and call him as the young men president. And how weird is that? And you hear those general conference talks, and this one I think was referred to a little bit, alluded to in general conference a few years ago. But the bishop at the time went to my dad's dad, my grandfather, and issued the call to him to be the young men president. He was inactive, smoking and drinking and all that, and my grandmother was also inactive, and he accepted the call and didn't know what he was supposed to do with these young men.
Yeah.
He wasn't even a churchgoer at the time. And so he had been in the Marines and kind of rough and tumble kind of guy. So he taught him how to box.
Wow, cool.
They did. Not all of their activities were around boxing, but he became active through this bishop's inspiration to call him, and later served as a ward clerk. He's very organized and it was really good and got some valuable experience and became a bishop and a stake president and then a mission president. And that's my dad's dad. That is, and it's kind of humbling and sobering to think that that's how close I was to not being born into the gospel, and how scary that would be to think about. How grateful I am for a bishop who had that inspiration to go and call him to be a young men president back in the day. So
you should ask my brother about our grandfather. We have a very similar story, but which we won't go into now. But I was going to ask follow up on that. It's coming. Oh, yeah. So as a bishop, I always wanted to, you know, I kind of consider myself a gutsy leader to some extent. I want to try some things, and I'm okay if they blow up in my face. And I always wanted to be that leader who was willing to call that individual who was inactive or smoking or whatever. And it seems nowadays there's such an emphasis on worthiness that we totally just dismiss these ideas of right, these individuals. Yeah. And even to the point where you have a very active individual and you just naturally, and if you're looking for, a Relief Society president or an Elders Quorum president, you just completely dismiss them, even though they come to church every week. Maybe they're not up to par with a variety of things worthiness, but I don't know. And it's a tough balance there because you want to respect the calling and put worthy people in there. But the stories like this, I mean, they're so inspiring.
Right. And I agree. I would like to have issued a few callings like that. Sometimes issue callings and you get turned down. And so maybe you're a little gun shy.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess maybe if the time is right and the spirit directs.
But yeah. Boy, and that's the other thing. I would have never done such unless I really felt inspired to do that. Not just to, hey, this will be fun. Let's call that guy.
Good story to tell.
I'm sure that the Lord would teach me a clear lesson if I did so. But yes. Well, let me fire off just some questions here. And your answer can be short or long. Doesn't matter. And they're just kind of random. And I'm sort of compiling with each interview. I compile this list. And because I think it's hard to tie these questions into anything else that we've talked about, but they're sometimes big questions for leaders. How did you balance the administrative part of your calling in relation to your ministering part of calling, just as you served as a bishop?
Yeah, that is a big, big question. And I'm a firm believer. I'm probably better at being a counselor or a support than I am at being the guy in charge. Is probably my personality, and that's okay. Everyone has different talents.
I would say 90% of bishops feel that way.
That's
I don't know, maybe not that high, but
a good amount, right?
Yeah.
And I think as a counselor, if you can do everything you can to take off that administration stuff from the bishop and allow the bishop to do the ministering is important. And yeah. So you have to do some of both, obviously, still, but. Obviously, we know that some things only the bishop can do,
right.
And allowing him to do that without the burden of all the other things is a big deal. And sometimes sometimes a member wants, they want the bishop in their home, and it's more meaningful if the bishop is in their home, but that's a lot of members and there's only one bishop. And, I think if we use, I tried to use my counselors and clerks and secretary and others and quorum presidents and all of those kind of things to do as much as of the administering as possible. And at the same time as a counselor, I tried to take those off the bishop's plate as much as I could as well. I probably could have done better.
How did you generally use Fifth Sundays?
I was under the impression, not under the impression, I was of the opinion and the feeling that the bishop and the youth really need to connect. So I loved having a very informal gospel discussion, and that could go one of two ways if you don't guide it. But there was one time I had a lesson all prepared, and we did nothing except for talk about charity in Moroni 7:45-ish or so. And we just went through that one scripture with the 10 or 12 young men and young women in the bishop's office. We just sit around and have a gospel discussion, almost like a fireside. And so I loved having Fifth Sundays, not so that I wouldn't have to prepare a lesson, but most of the time we didn't get to the lesson that I had prepared. And then my counselors, for the most part, not all the time, but for the most part, taught the combined adults, and we switched that off a little bit. But I felt like the time with the youth with the bishop in the room was really, really valuable for me.
Great. This is really off the wall question, but I think bishops can gain a lot from just to hear different styles. Let's say an individual came into your office as a bishop and they're struggling with a pornography addiction. Did you have a general approach to that? A go-to scripture? I know by appointment 3, it's its own monster, right? And you have to approach it uniquely, but any, like just starting off with that individual that you would do in the beginning.
With pornography and almost any sin, I think my first reaction, it's probably kind of who I am, but I've had some people give similar a good idea to approach this situation. I don't know why I can't think of that word right now, but some advice, I guess you could say. I think it's almost most important to give that member a standing ovation for being in the bishop's office and talking so openly about something that's so personal and embarrassing, and they're there. And I think that if you react the wrong way, I felt like they would be gone, and then that would be that. And so I would always have a prayer with them, but I would make them feel really, really encouraged about being there and let them see a glimpse of what the finish line might look like when this is all done, and then talk about some ways to get there. I think that if they can see that sin as it will become the pure whiteness of the snow, even though right there it's not, then they have a better chance of getting there. And I really, really emphasize feeling good about being there, talking about it at all, because just getting there is not very easy.
Great. All right. Another random question. What was your Mother's Day gift to the mothers?
Oh, that's interesting. We had, it was so different. So many different times. There was a little flower shop over here that, in fact, I'm such a, my personality, I think, is more of a pleaser, making sure that everyone likes me and no one hates me. And that's sure to fail, first of all. But so
as Bishop, yeah, but we all try.
Yes,
we
exactly. Over the years, there'd been some little chocolates, and I always liked having a spiritual message. I think Sister Julie B. Beck gave an amazing talk on motherhood and mothers who know. But we had given some flowers, and because I'm a guy, I can't remember the name of them. It might be geraniums, but that could be way wrong. But the sisters in the ward really had liked those over the years.
Was it a potted plant, or was it like was, a pin on?
No, no. Yeah. Thing? Like a potted plant type. Okay, thing. Right. Yeah. So that was, that's a good question. And they gave us a great deal because we ordered in bulk, and it was great. And the sisters liked it. At one point there was a suggestion, and this is where I get all flustered, is we should have this instead. And so then I got to get a pulse of the ward to see who's feeling this way. It's only you three, and these other 80 are really hoping we get the flowers again. And so anyway, it turns out that by doing an informal poll, the sisters liked the flowers far more than the music CD or the chocolates or the whatever. And, and again, not everyone's going to have their first choice, and I'm going to have to live with that.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting holiday for a bishop, because he has the power to really make a big mistake and offend a lot of people in one swoop. So, well, as always, as you look back at your time as a bishop and now getting your running start in the state presidency, how have these experiences made you a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
I think that I know that the Lord knows where we need to be more than anything. And I look at, if I had been in this calling or that calling or something else, I wouldn't be, pushed as much to develop my own skills and attributes for the Lord's service as if I had not been put in these callings. And I look at it as a huge blessing to have been stretched beyond what I felt were my reasonable limits. I don't think that you can really be qualified to be a bishop, no matter what you are beforehand. I felt that the best attribute that anyone could have to be a bishop beforehand is knowing that he's not ready to be the bishop. And in a way, that's something my dad or my brother, I can't remember exactly who, shared with me, is having a certain level of humility, and not just for show humility, but humility knowing that you can't do it without the Lord's help.
That concludes my interview with Scott Hall. I wish him luck as he starts his new journey as a counselor in a stake presidency. And maybe in a few years, we need to do another one so he can share what he's discovered about leadership and about himself in that calling. Before we end this episode, I wanted to highlight one quick way that you can help Leading LDS, and that is sharing your sacrament agenda, ward mission plan, or any type of meeting agenda that you use. And I'm trying to gather a library of agendas or sacrament meeting agendas, you know, just these day-to-day administrative forms that we use. And it seems like every ward has to recreate these items, reinventing the wheel over and over again, where there's some really good ones out there. And I want to make them available on Leading LDS. And so if you have a sacrament agenda or a ward council agenda that, you know, template that you follow, I would love for you to send that to me and I'll post that on Leading LDS. And of course, I'll get rid of all the information that would identify you. But I'll post it on Leading LDS so other leaders can peruse through that library and see if they want to adopt whatever plan that you've put together. And I encourage you to go check those out on Leading LDS as you're looking for a better way to do your calling. So until next time, be a leader and not a calling.